So we've all heard the cliches, boxing builds discipline and toughness and confidence, and all of that's great. But the real question I want to ask to my guest today is, what has the ring taught you about building a global business franchise and about leading humans through wins and losses and spotting greatness in someone before they even kind of believe in themselves? And so I'm delighted to have my good friend with me today, Russ Harrison, Chief Revenue Officer of Spartans Boxing Club, professional boxing coach and all-round legend. How are you doing, Russ?
Well, I'm good, mate. Thank you. That's a hell of an intro. I appreciate it. It's good to be chatting to you.
You're more than that and more still. But before we start, we've always got to get into the sort of nuts and bolts of who you are as a person. I think you can always tell who someone is as a person by who they select in Winner Stays On. So we're going to do Winner Stays On heavyweights, but in their prime, right? So you're comparing heavyweights in their prime. All right, here we go. Joe Frazier versus Mike Tyson.
Frazier.
Frazier versus Lewis, Lennox Lewis.
Frazier.
Frazier versus George Foreman, 70s version.
Frazier.
Frazier versus Riddick Bowe.
Frazier.
Frazier versus Klitschko, Vitali Klitschko.
Frazier.
Frazier versus Tyson Fury.
Ooh, Frazier.
Frazier versus Deontay Wilder.
Frazier, easily.
Frazier versus Muhammad Ali.
Well, we kind of know how that played out a few times, right? Oddly enough, mate, we started on this and you didn't even know this. And so there's no way in the world your viewers can know this. Muhammad Ali is my favorite all-time boxer because obviously he's an amazing boxer, but transcending the sport. But followed very, very, very closely is Smoking Joe. So you came out the blocks with that, mate. You couldn't have known. So I would say Muhammad Ali, because right. That's kind of how it went down. But it also went down. Smoking Joe got him as well, right? So
it.
Do they make him like that anymore?
I don't think they do. Muhammad Ali versus Evander Holyfield.
Ali.
Ali versus Anthony Joshua.
Oh, Ali, easily.
So, Winner Stays On for you is Muhammad Ali. I always do the same thing. We have something called the reverse Turing test, just to prove that we are human. My choice playing Winner Stays On there is Evander Holyfield. And people are always like, really? Shocked by that. Yeah. I think that Holyfield's the only, a lot of cruiserweights become heavyweights. Like Usyk is really a cruiserweight, became a heavyweight. Yeah. Yeah. I think Holyfield was a heavyweight that became a cruiserweight. He started as a cruiserweight, but he's actually a heavyweight. And I just think that I've never seen a chin like it. You look at the Lennox Lewis fight. You look at the Mike Tyson fight. You look at the fight against the 90s Foreman. I mean, what a chin. I've never seen anything like it. Plus, he had the speed. He had the power. He had the grit. I mean, you can see it's affected him. So everybody loves Muhammad Ali, and rightly so, but at the same time, I do think that his aura sometimes overshadows his boxing. Undoubtedly incredible boxer, but I do think that they were better. And I think that in a fight, Holyfield versus Ali, I think Holyfield would have won. I would give it him on points.
Yeah, we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one, but I don't disagree with your logic. And I think that entire list of boxers that you just read out then, like Klitschko, Wilder, Fury, and that's one of the things about boxing, right? Like there's so many incredible boxers who have been and also who are around. And not just boxing, right? Any sport. It's like so hard to be recognized and to stand out as an elite athlete. And these guys, all the names that you've mentioned, have obviously been legends in their own right. So just shows how incredible and great they really were.
I think it's one of the few sports that I can think of where to be classified as a great, you have to risk your life every time you go to work.
Yeah.
And when you think about it like that way, I mean, it's not a joke, boxing. It is like Obviously at Spartans Boxing Club, we focus on safety and making sure it's an enjoyable experience and fitness as a modality. But if you're going into professional boxing, you go to work knowing that you might die. And it's literally
Totally.
like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Russ,
And yeah.
I've known you for a long time, but maybe some people who are listening haven't known you as long. So why don't you spend a bit of time introducing yourself?
Yes, we have known each other for quite a while, mate. But for the people at home, so I'm Russell Harrison. I am the Chief Revenue Officer of Spartans Boxing Club. Spartans has been my baby with Nas since the start, really, 10 years this year. Who am I? I'm an Aussie. I'm an expat living in Singapore now for 15 years. I've done lots of things. Probably the two most significant things that I've done in my life is I'm a father, so I've got five kids. I'm a husband. My wife, a lot of people know her. She's a professional boxer as well, so that means that I do the dishes when I'm told. I have been into sports as a lot of Aussies are since I was a kid. So I started boxing and martial arts when I was 8 years old. And so I've played sports, I've coached sports, not just combat sports, team sports as well. And I've spent the good part of my adult life building a career. So initially, my career was in executive search and HR and consultancy. So that was kind of like the first part of my career. And then I had a career change where I moved over to the health and fitness sector about 10 years ago with Spartans. And funny how the world turns. I kind of end up back at my original love almost at current day now, where I'm also launching a an exec search and consultancy company very, very soon. So yeah, I do a lot of things, but I think probably I would say that the what I love to do in no matter what format is I love to lead people. I love to lead individuals, whether that be within their careers or within sports. As I said before, I've done teams as well, and I think that's probably the thing that I've figured out over the years is that's what lights my fire, whether it's leading individuals or teams or communities. I really love that. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning.
Awesome. So we're going to sort of dig into and scrape out as much of that experience as possible to try and help the audience in their own careers. And I think like the first place I want to start is one of the things I come across a lot is that someone can come into my office with a load of talent, but if they aren't coachable, it's basically irrelevant. And I want to really focus on like all of your experience, but really with a focus on you being a professional boxing coach as well. So for you, what makes someone coachable?
That's a huge question, isn't it? Look, if I had to narrow it down, I would think that growth mindset is probably the thing for me that makes somebody coachable. Somebody that you know that they're never a finished product, right? They're always wanting to grow and learn and improve. And so I think for me, like if I had to narrow it right down, I think it would be growth mindset, right? And I mean, we'll talk about grit and all that sort of stuff as well, right? Which is growth mindset is fundamental to all of that. So I would say that for me, it's growth mindset is number one. But I think there's a couple of other things as well, which I think are probably just as important. I think humility is a really important attribute to have to be coachable. And it's funny to be, and especially like a white guy living in Asia, right? When I moved from Australia, and especially the industry that I grew up in, which was, I grew up in sports, team sports, individual sports, and you had to have some level of ego and almost arrogance. And in fact, when I was younger, when I was playing team sports, that arrogance was in myself and my ability. That was one of the things that I thought brought out the best in me. And then moving to Asia 15 years ago, It was a real shift, and it was more about humility and being humble. And my parents had always tried to instill that in me, but the way in which they kind of tried to instill it in me was to say that, if you're good, there's always someone better. And, if you can fight, there's always someone tougher. And so it wasn't quite captured in the same way in which, when you live in Asia and people are genuinely quite humble as a culture, and that's how people operate. And I think that's something that I think is really come into the way I coach, but also the way that I look at people.
Yeah, fair enough. What about the other side of it, right? So someone who comes in and they're coachable is one thing. What about people who come into the gym and, they've got obvious potential, but they don't believe in themselves? Like, how do you go about spotting potential?
I don't know if, and this goes in any context, whether it's in the boxing gym, whether it's been in, football teams over the years that I've coached, or individuals in their career. I don't know if I've got this down to a fine art yet. I think probably one of the things that is the key, especially in boxing, is whether or not you've got talent or not, whether or not you're coachable or not. You've got to consistently just keep turning up, right? And if you can take somebody who you identify has got talent, and even they don't know it yet, if you can convince them, or maybe convince them is not the right word, but as long as they keep showing up and you connect with them and you coach them in a manner so that they keep showing up, eventually they're going to see that they've got capabilities, right? Because they're there, they're putting in the work, right? And so, I guess I probably think it's not some magical, mystical tool that the coach has, right? To go, oh, there's talent and I've identified it. It's more about just making sure that that person continues to rock up and put in the work. And I think that underpins success then.
Have you ever overestimated or even underestimated someone's abilities?
I would say I've done both, over the years. Overestimated in the boxing gym is probably the one that I would say all boxing coaches have probably been guilty of. And I guess when I think about that, it's been less about the person's ability and their talent. And it's been more about me saying, oh, this kid's got it. Look, look how great they are. But then after a while, they stop showing up, right? They're not willing to put in the hard work, or they're not ready to do the hard yards. And, it's that sort of consistency of effort over time, which is the thing that sort of, it really pays off. So I would definitely say that I've been guilty over the years of seeing someone coming to the gym. They move around early on. Maybe they have their first fight even really quickly. I'm thinking specifically there was a kid, I won't say his name, but there's a guy who came into our gym, I'm going to say about probably 6 or 7 years ago. He was a welterweight. He was a Thai kid. And he came in and he was incredibly athletic. And, within the first few months, he was in there sparring with all the really experienced guys. And, I think he had one or two fights. And we were all just blown away. We were like, wow, this kid's really got it. And literally in the blink of an eye, he was gone. He trained and he had some fights and he let it go to his head and he thought he was great. And then that was it. He'd kind of proven it to himself. Right. And so, and look, I just think of him as an example, but he's probably like the archetype of a number of people that I've seen over the years that maybe I've overestimated. Underestimating as well, sure. But I think the underestimating one is as you get sort of longer in the tooth as a coach, again, as long as people are willing to kind of come in and show up. What's the saying? Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard.
Yeah, I love that. Cool. So, what makes someone coachable, I guess, is growth mindset, having a point to prove, having humility, but also at the same time having like an aura, an ego, and like wanting to be able to sort of prove that, staying power and showing up. most importantly, just keep showing up. And I think that applies in business too, doesn't it? Like, you just keep showing up, however hard it gets, just keep showing up. I remember this story. One of my mentors told me. He was talking about his own son and how, his own son was running a business and his business was like on its last legs. And he came to his dad and he said, "Look, I think we're done." And his dad said, "Well, I'll tell you what, instead of giving up, just go for one more day. Just keep going for one more day." And he just kept saying that, "Keep going for one more day, keep going for one more day." And in the end, it was a massive business. He exited for like 20 million pounds sterling. So, keep showing up, I guess, is the key.
Keep
But you.
showing up, right? One more round, you know. There was a, along that similar sort of line when George Kambosos, the Aussie boxer, was going to fight, he's a massive underdog. He fought Teofimo Lopez for the undisputed titles at that stage. That was his whole thing through camp, right? It was just like round by round, right? That's all you can do in camp, right? Like you can only sh you just show up and you just do the next round in front of you, and then the next round, and then all of a sudden you've accumulated all of the rounds, and then same thing when he went into the fight. It was just like round by round. It's a great mentality to have.
Well, that brings me on to like the next area that I wanted to touch on, which is grit. I mean, you kind of mentioned it briefly before, and like grit in the psychology of just keep moving forward. There's kind of a myth that like fighters are born with grit, and that that's like a genetic trait, which I don't believe, just to be clear. But can grit be taught, or is it revealed?
Oof, that's a really tough question. I don't know, to be honest. I started talking about grit, I'm going to say about 8 or 9 years ago is when I really started to get into the research around it. So we were at that stage running, which we still do now, but this is when we first started our youth boxing programs, so our youth outreach programs. So we run those now. Through Imparts Singapore, but when we started running those, the first one, what we would do is we would get the kids in, and these are kids that have all been youth facing adversity, right? And they'd have to come into the gym and they'd have to do their boxing training, but also we would get different mentors in to come and do presentations and talk to them about different topics. And that's when I really started to jump into the research around grit. All of the Angela Duckworth stuff and all that kind of stuff. Look, I know a bit about it, but I don't know if you're born with it, or I don't know if it's revealed. Because I've seen, I guess, kind of both sides of that coin, right? I've seen people who, they didn't really seem like they had much about them, but when they were tested, grit really came out. Sometimes you need something to test you to bring it out, whether it was there in the first place or not, I'm not sure, right? But I think regardless of whether it's whether you're born with it or whether you can learn it, I think the key for me is the fact that, and one of the key things with grit is it is about remaining focused on a goal, but for a really, really long period of time, right? And I think that for me, and especially in this day and age, being patient enough to be able to stick to something for a really long time, that's so difficult to do, right? And so I'll give you kind of a personal anecdote. When I started doing combat sports back in 1988 is when I started, right? And let me tell you now, in Melbourne, in Australia, in 1988, doing karate and combat sports, that wasn't a cool sport to do, right? Like you played footy or, you did something that was a little bit more mainstream. And so I was lucky. I didn't choose to go into that, but I did it. But then I stuck with combat sports all throughout my life. Not necessarily, I don't know what the goal was. Like I wanted to be a good martial artist, right? In whatever format I was doing it, whether it be boxing, whether it be Muay Thai, whether it was wrestling, all that. I just wanted to be an accomplished martial artist, and I guess that was kind of thing. And sticking to it for a very, very, very long time. Like I'm 30, I'm 30 odd years of martial arts experience now. And then lo and behold, 10 years ago, this opportunity with Spartans presents itself, which would never have happened if I hadn't stuck to that thing for such a long period of time. And then I guess another sort of personal anecdote for us at the moment is, with Fash, my wife, similarly, she's been doing combat sports for a similar amount of time, although she's much younger than me, but similar starting age. And she's been boxing now for, I think, 13 or 14 years, and she's just had to stick at it. When you love it, when you hate it, everything in between, it's just that, like, sticking at it. And now the opportunities start to come, right? All of a sudden you're on a big international show, or you've had an opportunity to go to world championships, or you're most definitely not doing it for money, right? But you're doing it for something. But it's just that longevity that's the key differentiator to it.
Yeah, I think grit is just one of those anomalous human traits that are so difficult to spot in business and in life. I always think back to the white collar events that Spartans do, and you see the boxers, and I can think of one in particular in Dubai, who you really didn't think there was anything special about this guy. He was really quiet. He really didn't. He didn't look like he was exuding all of his effort. He wasn't a good boxer when he started. He was okay by the time it got to fight night, but he transformed in the ring. I mean, he came up against a really tough opponent. He won and he lost the first round, and he totally transformed. He found like a different level of reserves that nobody spotted. And I spoke to him afterwards, and I said, "Where did that come from?" And he said, "Oh, it came from growing up in a tough neighborhood." And I often think that like a bit of adversity in life is the thing that builds grit.
Yeah, look, I definitely agree with that. I wholly and solely 100% agree with that statement. But when you were telling that story, do you know what I thought about though? Like, grit is one thing, but also a really interesting thing that I find with sports and boxing is the way that people show up. That guy that you were talking about, whether it was grit that he was kind of calling on at that stage, right? But some people are game day players, right? Like, they love to show up on match day, and that's when they're going to perform at their best. They love being in front of the crowd. They like the energy of the room, all of that sort of stuff. By the same token, I've seen just as many boxers who are, they're sparring, they're sparring fighters, right? Like, they do all their best work in the gym. You see them spar, they're incredible. But come game day, they just can't get themselves into that mode. They can't show up. Right. You've got to do quite a bit of work, like with a mindset coach and stuff like that, to get you from being someone who can show up in the gym, but when it's game day, it just doesn't happen for you. And again, like, I don't know if this is stuff that's taught or learnt. But yeah, I find it really interesting. And quite often as a coach, like you as a coach, right, your job is to try and figure out who this person is and how do I unlock their potential. But these things that we're talking about, right, like grit and the psychology of showing up and all of that sort of stuff, I tell you what, if you're the coach that cracks that code, right, not just in sports, right, but in business, could you imagine if every single potential hire or staff member that walked into your office, you were able to go, yep, I've got you, I know exactly. I mean, I know exactly who you are and what you're about, and I know exactly how to unlock that. Could you imagine the team that you would have?
Yeah, no, exactly. I think that it would just be lightning in a bottle. But I'm always reminded, coming back to business, I'm always reminded of my team in Sudan. Life in Sudan was just hard. Like day-to-day life was hard. Getting to the office was hard. Were there buses? If it was raining, the roads were closed. But I never gave them a choice. You got to make your way to the office. And I always used to say to them, if you ever leave Sudan, Sudan will be your superpower because you have learned to deal, you've learned to do a really good job in a marketing agency whilst dealing with this low-level stress on a 24/7 basis, electricity cutting, internet cutting, water cutting. And lo and behold, after the war, 20 of them are now in the UAE, And within the first month, every single one of them was working at a high-paid job, really big companies. And every time I go back to Dubai, we always meet up, and they always say the same thing. You were right. We're in these companies, and we're the rock stars because everyone else is so soft. Everyone's so weak. They can't deal with any little bit of adversity, and we've got this like Sudan superpower. I want to dive into a little bit more of the psychology, though, right? Particularly around, because your wife and your fighter, Fash, had a fight a couple of weeks ago. So, talk me through the like mental prep the week before a fight, not the physical prep, because I guess you're tapering off by then. But what are you talking to her about? How are you sort of preparing her mentally for the fight night? Because it was a big event.
Yeah, that was a huge event. I think I would probably jump back a little bit if you want to talk about the sort of the psychology of preparing for a fight, right? Like, if you're talking about a professional athlete, so if we use Fash as an example, right? Although I'm sort of her boxing coach, we've got a team of coaches around her. So she has me as the boxing coach. She has a strength and conditioning coach. She has a brain training coach, where she does, specific drills and training for her cognition. And then she also has a mindset coach. So the mindset coach is a former Olympian. And basically that's all she does is work with athletes to get them ready for game day. The brain training coach is all of the technicalities of the brain training, right? Like the cognition and, the games and all of this sort of stuff, right? So there's the manager, right? There's the manager who also manages, all of the other bits and bobs, the non-boxing, non-athlete portion of it. So it really does, it takes a village to raise the child. And so it's exactly the same with the athlete, right? And so leading up to the fight, there's been a huge emphasis on the psychology. And obviously there's all different techniques and tools and, like some of the stuff that the sports psychologists will talk about is creating an alter ego, so that on match day you can show up. And obviously there's a lot of techniques that go into this. I'm not the psychologist or the sports psychologist or the mental coach, but, like visualizations, all of these things that any elite performer needs to do. So that's kind of like the whole infrastructure surrounding it. Leading up to the fight itself, or getting closer to the fight, a week or two out, it's interesting because you've almost done everything that you can do physically. There's no amount of sort of runs that you can go for in the last week, which is going to make a difference to whether or not you can, do 10 rounds or 11 rounds, right? That's what it is. So we focus a lot on the game plan. So making sure, like, and obviously you've been working on your game plan in practice throughout, whether it be drilling or sparring and all of that sort of stuff. But now it's just about the visualization and making sure that the game plan is really clear. On the big events, we're talking a lot about, like, what's the event itself going to be like? Like, when do we fly in and how do we acclimatize and get used to the weather? And what time should we be doing our training sessions when we've moved into a different time zone? All of that stuff is going on as well. And then, of course, I guess just being prepared for, almost what can go wrong will go wrong. And that's not talking about the performance on the night. That's talking about, the actual logistics of events and weigh-in and how's the media going to treat you and, what are you going to say to the promoter and what are you going to wear to the weigh-in and, all this kind of stuff. So that's, I guess, all of the things that are going on at that stage. I'd love to say that I'm just a very small cog in the wheel when it comes to, the whole thing.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like, it sounds like it's like a multifaceted approach. And like you said, it's like an F1 team who's preparing the car to get out on the road. I don't like MMA. I don't like it as a sport, not for any particular reason. It's just not a sport that I enjoy. One of the things that I do like about MMA is their acceptance of losses. Much, much better than boxing, right? The O doesn't really mean a great deal in MMA, and it does in boxing. So after a loss, how do you, what's the emotional process of bringing a fighter back and making them realize that, a loss is just a step in the journey, as opposed to, because they've gone through a camp, sometimes like a 2-3 month camp, and then, it all comes down to that moment they lose. How do you get them over the hump and ready for the next one?
So, a couple things in that. Number one is I concur with you with regards to MMA. I'm not a huge fan. I'm a boxing purist. I would say that boxing is getting much better around the acceptance, of losing the O, right? And there's been a lot of that over the last couple of years. And to be honest with you, for me, as far as I can remember, it was only a short period of time. Sort of when Mayweather was talking about being, when he was, I'm going to go out on a limb, but he only started talking about the zero when he was like 45 and 0, 46 and 0, something like that, right? And then when Mayweather was leading up to retirement, he was talking about 50 and 0. And for me, that's the only time that I can remember that the O was a big deal, right? I think for people who have been on the ground, especially at grassroots level, right, you understand that losses are built into the process, as you say, right? Like, there's a few absolute freaks in boxing who have gone through the amateur ranks and had an extraordinary win-loss ratio, right? The immediate one that comes to head is Lomachenko, right? Like 390 odd fights and one loss ever in the amateurs. That is not the norm, right? The norm is, if you've come up through the, and I, sorry, I say the amateurs, what we should say is Olympic style boxing, right? Because there's nothing amateur about it, right? It's incredibly high level. But so if you see anybody that has come up through Olympic style boxing, I mean, you go to a tournament, you go to an international tournament, and you go into a draw and you fight whoever you fight, right? Like, you could be the 40th seed fighting against the second seed for that particular tournament, right? So even if you look at the best Olympic style boxers who have come up through that grassroots, they're used to the losses being part of the process, being part of the journey, right? There's always something that gets said, in boxing is you either win or you learn. And so, I'm a huge fan of that. And I think just
Same in
to,
life, right?
it's exactly the same in life. But I think to answer your question, I mean, that was quite a general kind of statement that I've made there. To answer it very specifically, like, what do I do with my boxers? The key is I go in and we assess their performance, right? We assess their performance against what it was that we had set out to do, right? Were we able to execute our game plan? Right? Did we improve on the things that we wanted to improve on throughout camp or since the last fight? Right. And so what we're focusing on then is we're focusing on, like, literally not just through the camp, but also through what's happened in the fight. It's not the result, it's the process. Right. And I think that's really key. And so, like, all of the boxers that I've ever worked with, they've had to experience a loss at some stage, whether it's, through the Olympic style or whether it's in the pros. And typically, they will bounce back quicker if you're able to go through and you're able to objectively assess their performance against those things that we were working on. And to current example, Fash just took her first loss, the fight in Australia, and she was pretty bummed about it. We had a really strong opponent, and she felt really bummed about it. And I'm sure she does, feel a bit bummed about it now. But when we went back in and were able to look at the performance and we were able to identify the things where we fell short, and it wasn't it, like you didn't go out there and perform horribly, right? That's, I guess, what everybody's afraid of. Like, I've gone out and I've just done so badly. No, that's not what happened. And so I think if you're able to do that, as we've done, with Fash's last performance, she'll bounce back, right? And she'll bounce back very well.
She absolutely will, no doubt about it. Right, love that. So, grit comes through hardship, Psychology and mental prep is a team sport. It's not down to the individual. And, losing is a mandatory step toward winning, I guess. And I guess all of those things apply through life too. I'm curious, though, about the other side of that, because not everyone's a Mayweather who has an ego that can deal with winning relentlessly. How do you keep a fighter grounded after a win? Because I guess that can be more dangerous in some ways than bringing them up after a loss.
Yeah, completely. Again, I don't know if I've got the secret sauce to this. You probably see it in less experienced fighters, especially young guys. Sorry to say, but if you get sort of young man who is in his teenage years, and he starts to get some wind in his sails, there's already typically an element of ego there, and so trying to keep that in check is not that easy. Like I said, I don't know if I've got the secret sauce. I think one of the great things, and this reigns true no matter what level you're at, I think, boxing gyms are incredible places to be humbled, right? And I always say, be humble or you'll get humbled in the boxing gym, right? And so if you've got an athlete, or we've got a boxer, and they're on a winning streak, you should always be able to step them up, and you should be able to be pitching them against somebody who is, maybe they've had a win in a fight, but there should be people in the gym that you can help them keep leveling up. And so again, if you get a kid that's getting too cocky, you stick him in against one of your best boys for a spar, it typically brings him back pretty quickly.
Yeah, there is something very humbling about being clocked with a right, out of nowhere, and someone who's just way, way faster than you. Like, I always think, like, this, what do they say? Speed kills, right? And when you're in a ring with someone who's just way faster than you, your brain is running at 100 miles an hour, thinking, right, what am I going to do? I'm just going to have to, like, get close. Your instinct is, like, run away, but your mind is like, your thinking mind is like, no, you have to get close to him and you have to push it against him. You have to use your weight and your size against him. And it's so contradictory to do that. And so, yeah, I guess that's a good strategy, right? If someone's getting too big for their boots, stick them in with someone who's just much, much better, I guess. What
Yeah.
about in the corner, though, Russ? Like, in the fight, in the corner, you're sort of 5 rounds into a 10-rounder and you're 4-1 up. How do you keep the fighter grounded at that point?
Yeah, I mean, look, whether they, I think the important thing is, you're going to have a strategy, you're going to have a game plan, right? And so I think trying to make sure that you stick to that strategy all throughout is important. Now, if the fighter's going out there and doing really well and they've got a chance to close the show, then that may be an adjustment that you want to make, right? Like if they've got a if the person's hurt or whatever else, then that instruction might change. Go out and try and get the job done. That's fine. But I think the key for me is, regardless of whether it's you're doing really well and you're winning, or you're not doing as well and you're losing, there's going to be a game plan. There's going to be a strategy, right? So that's, I think, number one. Number two is, there's always going to be things that, like you can't show up on fight night and bring something new into the equation, right? Like you should have your cues, you should have things that that boxer is expecting, ready to work on, et cetera, to make it very difficult for them to show up on fight night and try and pull something out of the hat that they've never done before, right? So again, for me, it would just be maintaining. Look, what are the cues? What are the things that we've been working on? What's the strategy? And how are we measuring up to that? And I'd just be continuing to focus on that.
I'm thinking specifically of a fighter, and I'm trying to remember his name. British fighter, dreadlock, not dreads, but like braids, cruiserweight, fought against Kovalev, I think in
Yard,
Germany, and
yard,
lost.
yard,
Yes,
yard,
Anthony Yard.
Anthony
I'll
Yard.
never forget that fight because in the ninth round, his coach said to him, go and leave it all out there. And I was screaming, don't, like you're a roundup. Just sort of, and he did, and he went and he left it all out there in the ninth, came back in into the corner at the end of the ninth, and he was gone, and he got knocked out by a jab, the 10th. I always think like the responsibility that a coach has for those calls is so huge. It's such a big personal responsibility. How do you balance that? Like, that must be an emotional mind screw.
Look, it is, and I think when you first start cornering fighters, that's a huge responsibility. And I'm most definitely not a finished product. I've still got a lot to learn, but it is a huge responsibility. You've got the safety of the fighter first of all as your sort of utmost priority. Then you've got winning in the game plan. And so, look, it is. I think it is a huge responsibility. I think you use the example of Anthony Yard in that fight. I think there's been like recent examples of where I think corners have performed incredibly well, and when corners have performed less well. Right. And I think, the recent fight that we saw with Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, I think it was chalk and cheese between the instruction that was coming out of the corners at that stage. Katie Taylor's corner, Pete Taylor, I think it is, right, were incredible. Like, the instructions were clear. There was stuff that was actionable. And vice versa, I don't think that Amanda Serrano's corner were giving her the type of instruction that she needed from there. Now, when you're in the heat of the moment, same as an athlete trying to perform, right? Maybe you don't see all of the angles. Maybe you don't see the things that you're supposed to see on that night. This is what goes on when you are in that heat of the moment. Like, whether it be, boxing, combat sports, a game of basketball, or whatever else, right? It's a huge responsibility, and it's most definitely a skill that you can acquire and improve.
I guess so. It's like people don't really think about the corners, but there's such a big responsibility. But so I love that. So the trap of winning is really about when, keeping people grounded. And there's what I'm hearing from you is there's two main ways to do that. One way is to keep them grounded, quite literally, stick them in with someone who's better than them to bring them back to earth. But more effectively and more commonly for you is doing the same as you do for losing, which is review the plan, review the performance, keep people grounded in the, okay, so here's what the strategy was, here's what we did well, here's what we didn't do well, here's what we're going to improve for next time. Again, which sounds a lot like what you would do if you were coaching a business person.
Yeah, correct. And look, one of the things that I will say though, Aziz, is this, right? There is not, like, all of this stuff, I guess we're kind of talking generally, right? There's not a one size fits all, right? And so if I take it back to cornering, right? Typically, when I do my corners, they're very calm. Like, I'm not sort of someone that rants and raves and yells and all of that sort of stuff. And I'm always trying to give like actionable advice, things that the fighter can actually say, oh, okay, so I need to double up my jab, or, I need to make sure that I'm getting my head off the line. You know what I mean? Like, it'll be things that actionable advice, right? But with that said, you also sometimes need to be able to touch a fighter or get to a fighter or somebody that you're coaching in a different way, right? Whether that be emotional or whatever else. And then you have to know what they're going to respond to, right? So, like, if we just go back to the example that I gave, and I'm kind of like almost eating my own words here. Like, if I had a fighter who was doing like really well and their ego was getting ahead of them, and that was the thing that was fueling them, right? You kind of almost got to figure out a way that you could do that, and so that they can keep performing, right? Now, that is a really fine art, because if you took that same fighter and then you did what I said before, you put them in the gym and you pitch them against somebody who's a bit better than them, and they get smacked up a little bit, and then that deflates the ego, and that was the thing that was burning their drive, then you also haven't done your part as a coach, right? So it's such a, like, when we run our coaching courses through our boxing academy, right? And one of the things that we teach our coaches is about coaching styles, right? There's different coaching styles, and we always ask the new coaches, it's a trick question. We always ask them, like, what's your coaching style? Right. And so, somebody might put up their hand and say, yeah, I'm authoritarian. And next one might say, like, I'm a player's coach, and da, 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 da. Well, of course, the correct answer is you bring out the coaching style that is going to bring out the best in that individual.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. So look, I just want to hit two more sections with you, if that's all right, Russ. I want to just
Sure.
stick with this idea of the corner, right? Because from my own white collar experience, boxing is, I've played a lot of sports. There is no more lonely sport than boxing on fight night. Like you see those memes of people, that they're walking to the ring and it's all the crowd, and then they step in the ring and it goes silent. And that is exactly how it is. When you're
Exactly
in
how it
there
is.
and you're alone and everyone leaves the ring and it's you, the ref, and your opponent, there is nothing more lonely than that. And the responsibility that you as a coach have in the corner, and of course the cut man and whoever else is there in the corner with you, is huge. And you just touched on like different leadership styles, and I've had other pe different types in my corner. I very much respond to simple single instructions. I don't respond to people like shouting, "Oh, you're doing great!" I don't respond to that. I respond to, "You need to watch out for that slip, uppercut." One instruction, and I can focus on that. How do you? But it's not just you as the coach, right? So how do you make sure that you've got the right pit crew working in the corner and they're all working for the same objective, and people aren't talking over? Because we see that a lot, right? We see in Tyson's fight sometimes his dad's shouting over, and that must be so distracting. How do you manage that?
Oof. Again, look, I don't know if I have the secret sauce to this. I am pretty clear in terms of the way that I like my corners to work when I'm the coach. And so, if I am the first, if I'm the head coach, I'm pretty clear with my guys how I want the corner to work. And so, we don't leave anything to chance. Right, like I wouldn't rock up on the night and we get in the corner, and then if you're the second and you start barking advice, and that's not the time I'm going to tell you, right? Because the fighters already had, like, beforehand, and we just did this in Sydney when we were in Sydney, right? I had some of my old buddies in Sydney that were working the corner with me in Fash, and like a professional corner will know. They'll ask the head coach, "Look, what do you want me to do? This is how the water's going to be. Do you want to pull the mouth guard out in between rounds? If we need to work a cut, this is how we're going to work it." Like it's all prepared, it's all planned, right? It's professional. You're not just going to wing it on the night, right? So for me, all of my corner always has to be like that. One of the things that I can tell you, which is my pet peeve, and you should see this less when you're dealing with elite level stuff. So if you're talking about on the international circuit or pro boxing or whatever else, you'll see this less, right? But when a boxer gets there and the coach is off, like, talking to people or, having a smoke or, whatever else, and the boxer should really be wrapping up their hands, or, somebody should be there with the boxer because the boxer's looking stressed and they just need a little bit of support or whatever else. Like, you do kind of see that stuff, and I'm pretty clear with my boxers and also with my coaches exactly what the expectation is, right? Like you said, the boxer is there. It's lonely. They've already got enough stress to be thinking about how are they going to perform. They shouldn't have to think about, is there enough water? Where's the bucket? Are my hands wrapped properly? How do I get my hands signed off? Blah blah blah. If you're operating professionally and if you're operating at a decent level, all of that stuff should be very, very clear and sorted.
So translate that then into like your business mindset. How do you go about building a team as a founder, or if like, because you're responsible for the sort of international growth of Spartans Boxing Club, and you're going into a new country, and you're finding a franchisee, and you're helping them, you're supporting them, you're coaching them to build the team around them. So how, what lessons do you take from building your corner when it comes to building a gym?
Yeah, look, I mean, that's a really good analogy, right? Like that is the whole thing that essentially we're doing with Spartans Boxing with a franchise, right? It is, look, we know exactly how things must work in order for this business to operate as it should, right? We know that you should have, The franchise owner needs to behave like this, and the gym manager needs to have these skills, and they need to behave this way, and they need to be focused on these things. And it's really clearly defined, right? Like, this is how you do a pre-launch marketing campaign, right? Like, it needs to be, the assets need to be set up at this stage. Pre-launch needs to start at this point. This is how much money you need to spend. This is how many leads you're going to generate. That's what your conversion rates should be. Like, it's all, it's all clearly spelled out so that you don't go into it. Right, perchance. Right, and so I think that's key for me. Like, if I was going to go out and set up a boxing gym or any business now, like, I wouldn't want to think that any of this stuff was left to chance.
Yeah,
right. I just wouldn't.
I love it. Yeah, and I love that approach. It's one of the things I admire most about you. Preparation, preparation, preparation. There's nothing is left to chance, because there is chance in business and there's chance in boxing. That chance is there that you can't control. There's the uncontrollable things. And what you want to be able to do is control everything that you can control and have clear benchmarks against what success looks like in all of those variables, so that you've got the mental space to deal with the things that you can't control, the delayed planning permit or, whatever it might be. So I love that. Russ, I've gotten so much from this. I'm going to end, though, with quickfire questions. Don't overthink it. Just say what comes to mind. All right. Southpaw or Orthodox?
Orthodox. Southpaw should be
killed,
hung and quartered.
Power or speed?
Power.
Heart or skill?
Heart.
Do you prefer the ring or the boardroom?
Probably the boardroom. Probably the boardroom. Whether or not I'm better in the ring or the boardroom, I don't know.
Grit, is it born or built?
Undecided, don't know.
Prefer to be a coach or prefer to be a business leader?
I see them kind of both one and the same. I enjoy facets of them both.
Plan or adapt?
Plan and then adapt.
Offense or defense?
Defense.
Great jab or a great hook?
Jab all day.
Prefer to be silent or prefer to hype it up?
Hype it up.
What's the best teacher, praise or pain?
Oof. I think pain, but I respond better to praise.
After a loss, what do? Rest or run?
Run.
One word for Spartans.
Incredible. Exciting. That's two words.
One word for leadership.
It's tough.
And one word for next year.
Exciting. Opportunity. It's two words.
Fantastic.
Again. I can't. One of the things that come out of this podcast is Russell can't count.
It's fantastic. Thank you so much, Russ. I've got a lot. I know the audience is going to get a lot from this too. Really appreciate your time and look forward to having you on the podcast again in the future. Cheers,
buddy. Thanks for having me, mate.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. Before you go, I just want 30 more seconds of your time. Firstly, thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps getting exposure to the podcast for other people. We only do this stuff for you, so please do take a moment to leave a review. If you are interested in our digital marketing agency, Cush Digital, you can go to cush.digital and hit the contact form and we'll get right back to you. The Impact Lab has a free course on the website called The Prompt Monkey Problem. So if you think that you are in that category of people who are using AI too much and not necessarily building foundational skills or foundational knowledge, go to the impactlab.store and you can sign up for the course entirely free, no catch, no credit card, nothing. Just jump in, do the course, get your certificate, and then start building your own foundational knowledge in marketing. Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you at the next episode.